We have a wonderful crowd here today. This is great, and I really appreciate you asking me to speak today. It's very humbling, and I appreciate you having the confidence that I could handle something like this, because sometimes I don't know. And also say this, I'm not so sure about this waiting to be the last speaker. This is a little, I have more time to get nervous. You think instead of sitting there, you know, getting more at ease, I think it, you know, just builds up the tension a little bit more. I'm doing things a little bit more the old fashioned way today. I didn't do a PowerPoint. I didn't write down all my scriptures on my outline. So I hope that we can all, just participate. Maybe calling on volunteers to read some verses, ask you to answer some questions. Since I didn't put all the verses on the outline, you may be wanting to take some notes if there's a specific scripture that you want to remember and go back and look at later. We've had two great lessons about storms already, storms that were people brought upon themselves, even ways that we bring storms upon ourselves today. And we had a lesson about the storms that get thrust upon us, even without us doing something to cause it. It just happens. Life happens, as she said. And now we want to discuss possibly how we can overcome those storms. We want to look at some examples of people who had storms thrust upon them and how they overcame them. And we want to look at some ways that we possibly can overcome as well. Now that we've discussed the different type storms, we want to look a little bit more at how to deal with those storms. The first example we want to look at is Joseph. A lot of times we think of Joseph when we think of someone who had to deal with a lot of things in his life, starting at an early age. Joseph was in a family that was not a poor family. We know that in the story of Jacob, when he left his father-in-law, Laban, took his wives and left, he had lots of animals, lots of family. He had possessions. So it was a family that was not a poor family. So this is what Joseph was growing up in. And he was like almost the youngest child. He was next to the youngest of the 12. And there were lots of things that happened, and starting at about age 17, this all comes from Genesis chapter 37, and most of this story of Joseph that we're going to be looking at is from chapter 37 on up through 40 to 41, mostly, of Genesis. Joseph was first, the first thing that we see his father doing that maybe starts to cause a little bit of trouble, a few storms in Joseph's life, is in Genesis 37, verse 2. The older brothers were out working in the field, and they sent, his father sent Joseph out there to see how they were doing, what they were doing. And Joseph, as a lot of younger brothers will do sometimes, came back with a bad report. He gave a bad report on his brothers, so that really, you know, made his brothers feel real good about him to start with. So he gives this bad report on them. And then right about the same time, Joseph's father does something that just really causes a stir among the brothers. And who can tell me what Joseph's dad did that caused the problem? Gave him a special coat. Did he give one to the other brothers? Nope. He didn't make any. Good job, Izzy. He didn't. I love having you there. If I can look at you and smile, then everything feels all better. It's like having one of my grandchildren there. No, he gave him this coat to just show that he loved him so much. But he didn't do that with the other brothers. And favoritism never does help us love our brothers or sisters more, does it? It just causes strife in the family. This started a whole generation back. Jacob had been the favorite of his mom, where Esau was the favorite of his dad. So then he passes that along. Joseph becomes his favorite, and it causes more trouble with the brothers because they didn't like that at all. That's found in Genesis 37, verses 3 and 4. Joseph started having dreams. Now, God was giving Joseph these dreams, And it was for a reason. God had a plan that was going to be worked out over a span of many years, but God started out this plan and he gave these dreams to Joseph. Joseph was able to interpret these dreams and tell what they meant at a later time. Right now, at the beginning, when he first started having the dreams, I don't think he was so sure about what those dreams meant, but he went and told his brothers. He said, I had a dream about you guys and you bowed down to me. And then he went to his mom and dad and said, I had a dream about you and you bowed down to me. And this just made the brothers just be even more upset with him. We just can't stand this guy. You know, he thinks we're going to bow down to him one day. But the interesting thing about it is they did. But at that point, they were just sure they were never going to bow down to this little brother. He just, you know, he was just made them sick. They just couldn't stand it. So they hated him. It says in Genesis 37, verse 5, that he was hated by his brothers because of those dreams. Now, that's a strong word. But as we go on with the story and we see the things that they proceeded to do to their brother, obviously they did hate him. And they decided to come up with a plot to get rid of him. Most of them wanted to kill him. Now, there was a couple of the older brothers that said, no, I just don't think we should do that. You know, if they, you know, try to kill him, I'm going to keep it from happening. He went out to check on him again one day, just like his father had asked him to do a second time, told him to take some things to them. They were out there tending the sheep. And these brothers, it says in verse 11 of Genesis 37, they envied him. And then in verse 18, it says, when he came out there to see about them, they conspired against him. They made a plot to, at first, kill him. They threw him into this pit and said, we're going to put him in there and then we're going to kill him. And that's when the older brother thought, you know, I'll just come back and I'll get him out of that pit later on and I won't really let him kill him. While he was in the pit, there were some merchants that came along, some Ishmaelites. And then the brothers decided, oh, well, let's just make something off of him. This would be better. Let's don't kill him. Let's just go ahead and make some money off of him. He's caused us so much trouble. So they sold him to these Ishmaelites. Now, here he is in this nice, well-to-do family, 17 years old. All of his brothers take him and sell him to these strangers. He doesn't know what they're going to do to him or where they're going to take him. They wind up taking him to a strange country. What was the country? Where'd they take him? Egypt, which was more of God's plan because that was the beginning of how God would one day bring the people out. But they took him down into Egypt, which was a strange country. And when they got to Egypt, who knows what happened as soon as they got to Egypt? What did the Ishmaelites do with Joseph when they got to Egypt? Sold him. Sold him to Potiphar. Potiphar was a guy that was pretty powerful there in Egypt. But to just the thought of being, now you're a slave. You were a free kid out there in a well-to-do family. And now you're in a strange country, sold as a slave. And you don't know what's going to come from this, what you're going to be required to do, if you will survive all this. Now, there were some good things that happened here. Joseph, even through all of this, Joseph stayed strong. He behaved himself like God wanted him to, and God took care of him. And anybody that was working with Joseph could see that God was with him, that he was making things prosper. So he had a good position here with Potiphar, wasn't being mistreated at all. But that's not the end of the story for Joseph either. A few more storms to come his way. Potiphar had a wife that thought that Joseph was very desirable. He was a young man, and in other places we're told, you know, a good-looking young man. And she decided that she wanted time with him. She made advances to him, but he would always ignore them. And this made her angry. So one time, she grabbed him by his coat and was just demanding that he lie with her. But he pulled away once again and said no and ran from her. Well, this was all it took. She said she didn't want to be ignored anymore, so she lied about him. She screamed and called the servants, the guards, and said, "Here's his coat. He tried to come in and take advantage of me, and he has run out." So she told her husband. Her husband believed her and put Joseph in prison. So now he's no longer in a good situation as far as the position he was in. He's now in one of their dark prisons. The prisons in those days, you know, weren't somewhere that people wanted to be. It's like a dark dungeon. You didn't get all this wonderful food and exercise and you know, whatever you desired in those prisons. You didn't want to be there. But he was put into this prison. But even in prison, the guards could see that things were prospering. Joseph was good. They could trust him. So they put him over the other people in the prison. Now, there came a butler and a baker that got thrown into prison. And while they were there, they had some dreams. And this is when Joseph realized that he could tell people the meaning of dreams. And he told these two men the meanings of their dreams. And we're up to about chapter 40 in Genesis at this point. And he interprets their dreams. These things that he said would happen, one would be freed to go back to work for the king, one would be hanged. And both of those things happened. But when the butler was given his job back, Joseph said to him there in prison, "Don't forget me." And because he was glad that he interpreted his dream, so he said, "Don't forget me." So the butler proceeds to go out and go and start working for the king, and guess what? He forgot him. For 2 whole years, he forgot him. He stayed in that prison 2 more years, and then all of a sudden, the king starts having dreams. Now the butler remembers him, and he says, "I know somebody that can tell you what those dreams mean." So then he goes back, and they get Joseph out of prison, clean him up, get him all ready to present him to the king. He goes to the king and tells the king the meaning of the dreams. Okay, so all these looks like storms that Joseph has gone through lead him up to this point. Now, this is where the storms in his life become not so bad. Things start getting better. And wind up showing God's providence. I love that POG. I go by that too. This is where a lot of things start showing God's providence too at this point. The king is so pleased that he interprets these dreams that he says, "Well, what should we do about it?" And Joseph says, "You need to get someone and put them over all of the crops and things. Make sure you grow enough crops. Bring in some and store them so that you'll have some when the famine comes. And then you'll have enough for yourself. You can sell it to the people and then other people around." And he says, "Well, who can I find that could be over something like this, this big project that I could trust?" And he answered his own question. He said, "You're the only man I know that could handle something like this." So he put Joseph in charge of the grain, the crops, all that that was going to be coming in to save them all from the famine. He put him over everything in Egypt, it says. And he was second in command. Only the king was more powerful than he was at that time. The famine came. He was able to save his family by being in charge of Egypt and the storehouses there. His family came from their country over into Egypt to buy food. Of course, they did not realize it was him at this point that they were buying from. In Genesis chapter 46, verse 29, we see that he was once again reunited with his father. Eventually, after he saved his family from hunger, he was reunited with his father. Then his family was brought over and got to move to Egypt with him. And in Genesis chapter 39, verse 2, I want somebody to read Genesis 39, 2, and someone to read Genesis 39, 21, which shows us how Joseph came through these storms and why. Okay, who wants to read verse 2? Okay.
The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian.
Okay, verse 21. Okay.
The Lord was with him, he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the great Lord.
Okay, so through all the things that we read about Joseph, the storms, then when he overcame the storms, these are the two verses that tell us the reason why. It said God was always with him. In the bad time, in the good time, God was with him. And in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, Joseph told his brothers the reason that all these things happened. Does someone want to read Genesis 50, verse 20? Okay. The brothers meant to do something evil to him. All these storms came along, happened to Joseph. He said, "You meant it for evil. God meant it for good." Joseph realized at this point in his life that God had had a plan all the way along, that God meant this for good. And just like Donna mentioned Esther, she said, "What if I was put here just for such a time as this?" God has a plan. I believe that, you know, sometimes God puts things in motion to happen for us too. It's funny that we are in Eubank, Alabama now. Dale and I look back and we talk about how this got started 40 years ago. 40 years ago, we were being groomed for eventually living in Eubank. We were in Cincinnati at the time. There were a lot of people in Cincinnati who from down here that were working there, and they would talk to the people down here and say, "Why don't you let our preacher come and hold a gospel meeting for you?" So he started coming down here, and he went to Hazeldale, and he went to Eubank, and he was just all over doing gospel meetings because of the people that worshiped with us in Cincinnati that had family down here. We got to know all the people around here. We got to know the area. We got to know the back roads and all that, how to get from here to there. And the people got to know us. And then we were moved around to Alabama. We came back, then eventually wound up in Kentucky. We were closer again. They started calling in for gospel meetings again. And then when Eubank was looking for a preacher, they called and said, "Hey, you know this area. You know the people around here. You know, you've been here so many times before. Why don't you come and work with us?" And we just look back and feel that 40 years ago, God was getting us groomed for this very place that we are now. And we're very thankful for that too. The next person we want to look at that went through storms and came through them, survived, is Mary, the mother of Jesus. In Luke chapter 1, verse 26 to 35, it tells us part of the beginning story of Mary. It says she was a virgin, and there was an angel that came to her and told her that she was going to have a son by the Holy Spirit. Now, right after she found this out, she goes off and she stays with her cousin Elizabeth for 3 months. She comes back, and then people realize she's pregnant. Okay, so she's engaged to a man named Joseph, and he was kind of concerned himself. He was thinking about putting her away, because if you can imagine, your fiance comes back after being gone for 3 months and says, "I'm pregnant, and oh, by the way, it's by the Holy Spirit." And he's going, "Oh, yeah, right. You know, what else am I supposed to believe? I better put you away because I don't know about you." But God saw to it that an angel came to Joseph and assured him, "No, she's telling you the truth. It is right. Now, she had this this child. And, you know, I think that probably she had to go through, and we don't know for sure, the Bible doesn't say it exactly, but I'm sure she had to go through ridicule, people who doubted that what she had told them was the truth, that doubted that she had been a virgin and was a pure woman. Over in John 8:41, that's an interesting passage because I think it's possibly a put down of Mary. We don't know for sure. But they were questioning Jesus. Jesus was talking about them being sons of Abraham. And they said, at least we're not sons of fornication. Now, whether they were, you know, whether this verse is saying that they were making fun of Jesus and saying, hey, you probably came from fornication just because of the reputation that Mary had, we don't know that for sure. But it could be, with the things, the way that they happened, they could have very easily been ridiculing her. Now, I've got quite a few things I want to get through. We're going to go through some of this pretty quickly because otherwise we'll run out of time. She had to watch, first of all, she had to take her baby and flee because she had to be afraid that someone was about to kill her child. And you know that would be a storm in your life if you had the fear that someone was out there trying to kill your newborn baby. So she had to flee to another country. She had the fear of a child that went missing for 3 days when he was 12 years old. If it's anybody that's ever had anything close to that to happen to you, you know what a terror that is. We were in a huge mall in Panama City, Florida one time when our son was just real little. And he always liked to stop and look at things as we'd be going on. And we'd always say, come on, come on. This time he kind of lagged back and his dad stepped over behind a pillar just to kind of scare him. Well, we're the ones that got the scare because when he looked up and didn't see us, he took off running as fast as he could. And my husband just about jumped the thing, the table there to get to him and still couldn't find which way he had gone. And you talk about fear, just utter fear in this huge mall. And this was right after the, if you, anybody remembers years ago, the Adam story that came out. And, oh, we were terrified. I cannot describe. And what was, you know, 15 minutes or something felt like an eternity. So I cannot imagine 3 days in a big city looking for your child. We never had felt so relieved as when they came over the intercom and said, well, the parents of Bobby Robbins, please come to the desk. He had actually tried to get out the front door to try to find where we were parked. We weren't even parked at the area where he was trying to get out the door. And a little older lady was there. She said, where are you going? He said, I gotta find my mom and dad. She said, well, let's just come back in here and we'll probably find them in here. So thank God and Pog for the little lady that found Bobby and brought him back. But the fear of losing a child, she had to go through that. And then when they found him, of course, as any mother does, she scolded him a bit. Didn't you know we were worried about you? And he said, I had to be about my father's business. Well, she didn't know what that meant exactly, but it says she kept it in her heart. There were, she watched him start his ministry. We don't have anything much said about what she did between the age of 12 and when he started his ministry at about age 30. But she watched him start that ministry. She watched him do miracles. And she watched him be mistreated. Now, there's nothing much that hurts you more than seeing somebody be mean to your kids. You know, you can get fighting words, you know, when you want to get up and whip somebody if they're hurting your children or your grandchildren. And she had to watch the mistreatment. Luke 23:27 says that there were women who mourned and lamented when he was carrying his cross. She may have been one of those women that was in that group. I'm sure she did a lot of mourning and crying over the things he had to go through. In John 19:25, she stood by the cross and watched him die. So how in the world could a woman go through all this and overcome it? Especially, you know, your son is up there and he's dying and he didn't do one thing to deserve it, not one. Luke 2 tells us that she didn't understand it, but she kept all these things in her heart. Another way I think that helped her to make it through it was when she was standing at the foot of the cross, John, who was the beloved apostle, was told by Jesus to take care of her. Now, they didn't have all these government agencies and all this to take care of people back then. If you were a widow or you had no children, you know, you were on your own unless you had the benevolence of somebody who would take you in and take care of you. So he told John, take care of her, and John did. Now, after that would be another thing that would help her make it through it, and then the ultimate would be seeing him arise from the dead and go back to heaven. We don't have verses that say she actually saw him with her eyes, but we know that John, that she was living with, saw him multiple times, even saw him rise back up into heaven. So if she didn't see him with her own eyes, you know that he did, and he let her know that that he wasn't dead, that he had gone back to God. All right, another example of someone who went through lots of storms and overcame it is Jesus Christ himself, and we've mentioned this several times. He is our ultimate example. He was with God, John 1 tells us, in the beginning. He was up there with God when God was creating everything, and he had to leave the presence of God and all that's wonderful up there to come down here. And Hebrews 2:9, that was read as a text, says he was made lower than the angels to suffer death. The Gospels tell us that he suffered in the garden, and then he suffered the horrible death on the cross. John 12:27 tells us his soul was troubled about his coming death. But God highly exalted him, and it says in Hebrews 2:9 that he crowned him with glory. That was the way that Christ overcame. He was the perfect sacrifice. He overcame, and God gave him a crown of glory back in heaven again after it was all over. You might want to write down Philippians 2:5-11, which tells, you know, Jesus' whole story in just a little few verses, tells that what he had to leave, but yet what he got as a reward after he overcame. Now, I've got on the outline that there were eight things that we can do when we're faced with storms. We'll go through these real quickly. First thing that we can do is a self-examination. In 2 Corinthians 13:5, whenever a storm comes, examine yourself just to make sure that you're not doing something wrong, that needs to be fixed, and that's why you're having the storm. So examine yourself, 2 Corinthians 13:5. The second one is just like David did when he made a mistake with Bathsheba and realized that he had, repent. If you see with your self-examination that you're doing something wrong that's causing these storms, repent. And also in James 5:16, it tells us to confess to each other and to pray. Okay, the third thing, we need to strengthen our self-control. In 1 Corinthians 9:27, it says, I buffet my body daily. That means you discipline. Discipline yourself. If you see some weaknesses there causing some of these storms, strengthen your self-control. Discipline yourself to do better. And that's not easy for anybody, but that's what we need to be working on. The fourth one, remove temptation. If you're having problems and storms in life, you know it's being caused by a weakness or something, remove those temptations. Mark 9:47 talks about if you have an eye that offends you, pluck it out. It'd be better to not have that eye than to, you know, miss heaven. So try to remove temptations, even some of the ones like Cassie was talking about today, that cause storms in our life. The next one is make sure to lean on the Lord, Matthew 11:28. He says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. So if you're having storms in your life, lean on him. The next one, remember who the adversary is, James 1:13. Don't blame God. Whatever storm comes your way, don't blame God. God says God doesn't tempt us. as Joseph could have done. He could have blamed God, but later on he saw that God, it was God's plan all the way along for these things to happen so it could all turn out for good. So remember who the adversary is. The next thing that we can do is try to decide if we're having this storm or this trial as a chastening. Hebrews 12, verse 6. And chastening doesn't necessarily mean punishing us for something. Chastening is something that's done to teach us a lesson. And maybe it could be a chastening that's to help us learn a lesson along the way. And the eighth one, James 1, verse 2 and 3. Count it all joy, knowing that the trying of your faith worketh patience. Look for growth. Look for the silver lining. Because all that's happening may be there just to help us grow. And we need to look for ways that we can grow whenever we have a storm like this. Now, I quickly want to mention the storm out on the sea when Jesus was in the boat with his disciples. They're in a boat and this great big huge storm comes up, and that's not where you want to be when there's a storm. There's rocking and water splashing over in the boat, and they were terrified just like we would be. They were, Matthew 8:25 says, they said, Lord, save us, we're perishing. Mark 4:38 says that they said, do you not care that we're perishing? Where was Jesus when they were so scared? He was asleep. He was laying in that boat asleep, this big old storm splashing the boat around, and he was sleeping. He didn't fear because he knew everything was under control. He knew who his Father was. He knew his powers. Everything was under control. He wasn't afraid, but they were panicking. But they had Jesus right there. They had him right there in the boat with them, and they were panicking. After all they'd seen him do, after all he had told them about himself and what would happen, they were panicking, but he was right there. He awoke and he asked them, why are you so afraid? How is it that you have no faith? Maybe when we're panicking so over our storms and we have Jesus right there, that maybe our faith needs to be strengthened. Maybe Jesus is asking us, where is your faith? When we go through storms, we have him right there. He has felt rejection. He's felt betrayal. He's had lies told about him. He's felt loneliness. He's felt the death of loved ones. He's felt anguish over what he was going to suffer. And Matthew 8:20 says he didn't even have a place to lay his head. So it sounds to me like he's been through any storm that any of us have been through. He's right there and he knows what we feel. 1 Peter 5:7 tells us, cast all your cares on him, for he careth for you. And he does, because he's had all of those feelings. He's been through the same things that we have. In conclusion, I want to mentioned something that my little three-year-old granddaughter said just a few days ago, and I thought, oh, this is so perfect, I'm going to put you in my in my lesson. She came to her mommy in the kitchen the other day. She came in to get something, then she was going to run back out to play, and my daughter just reached down and gave her a big hug, a big squeeze, and she went to run back out to play. She stopped at the door just before she went out, and she said, I'm so glad God put me in this family. I want us to be glad that God put us in this family. This is it's a spiritual family, but it is family. And if we're children of God, we have this family right here. When the storms come, talk to everybody that's your family. Talk to them. Get to know them. Share yourself with them. Just like you do with your physical family. We have family right here. When the storms come, you may not even have your physical family with you. They may not be behind you, or they may not be, you know, physically here with you. But just like in the boat, Jesus is right there. He's just right there with you. And this family It's just right there. So together we weather all these storms. Thank you so much.